Dr. Manette has been recalled to life, brought back from France by his daughter Lucy and Mr. Lorry of Tellson's Bank. On the ship home, Lucy meets a young man who will not reveal his name, but even in so short a time engages her affections. Time has passed. They have not met again. The doctor has regained his wits, and Jerry Cruncher, long-time employee of Tellson's, starts another day's work. He is, in the morning, a man of...
Ow!
...uncertain temper.
Why'd you do that, Pa?
Because, Natty Cruncher, you is almost as aggravating as your mother.
You was out again last night, wasn't you, Pa?
And thin times it was. Nothing to be made of it.
Made of what, Pa? Can I come next time? I could help. I'm old enough now, ain't I? Ow! Why'd you do that?
Because, Natty Cruncher, life ain't fair. You can help me at Tellson's and that's enough.
More enough for the poor lamb.
Poor lamb? You've just served up a whole flock of lamb's kidneys, a devil as hot as hell. What would the good shepherd think of that, then?
Ow! Why'd you do that, Pa?
To teach you to keep your mouth shut in front of your elders and betters, Natty Cruncher.
And it strikes me, Mrs. C, that you is as inconsistent as you is aggravating. Nat, eat me boots and be quick about it.
Jerry and Son on the way to work. Jerry yawning, Son wondering what it is his dad does on those moonless nights. Jerry whistles a jaunty air. Son mooches, wondering where Dad gets that red rust on his fingers when he's been out on those moonless nights. They enter Tellson's front office, where Jerry has a perch and Son fetches and delivers.
Dad, they wants a word.
They being who?
Our party. Yeah. Office. Says it's urgent-like.
All right. Keep me stool warm, Natty.
At Tellson's, they take in young men and, over the decades, marinate them with money and dust until any shred of youth is tatters. Only then do they have a voice in bank affairs. So, Cruncher, you know the Old Bailey?
I do.
And you know Mr. Lorry?
I do.
Then you are to proceed to the Bailey. Use this pass to gain entry.
As you say.
Let's stand at the back of the court where Mr. Lorry may see you.
See me.
You are to be ready to take any message Mr. Lorry should care to send, understand?
I do.
Splendid.
Try and forgeries this morning, is that?
None of your business, Cruncher. Treason. It's treason today.
That's hanging, drawing and a-burning.
What's that to you?
Seems barbaric, somehow, in this modern age, of doing that to a body.
Get along with you, man.
As you say, sir.
Jerry leaves at his own pace, in his own style, still pondering why they should trouble a body that might, untroubled, turn a decent profit for a fellow in their business.
Is it a job, Pa? I'll do it. I can run fast. You knows I can. Ow! Why'd you do that?
Treason. Treason, they say.
The prosecution may continue.
Thank you, Your Honour. Your name, sir?
Barside. John Barside.
Mr. Barside, what is your profession?
Import-export, goods and otherwise, sir.
Now, I'm going to ask you to cast your mind back.
Very well.
To a voyage you were making between the port of Calais in France and Dover.
Very well.
Now, I want you to tell me if there is anyone in this court who was aboard the same ship as you, the Maid of Kent, making the same voyage. Take your time now.
Yes.
And will you point out that person to the members of the jury?
It's him. The young fellow over there.
Over where, Mr. Barset?
In the dock.
In the dock, where he stands accused of treason.
That's a fellow. And there were some others, too, sitting over there. The fat gent and the old gent and the pretty boy.
We'll get to them in a while, Mr. Barset. For now, I'd like you to concentrate on the accused, Charles Darnay. When did you first see him?
At the inn, on the dockside in Calais.
He was taking a drink, ordering a meal, as any traveller might?
No, sir. He was in conversation with some fellows.
Some fellows?
Shady fellows, shady conversation.
And how could you know that, sir?
I was close enough to pick out the gist of the conversation. I heard words no decent Englishman should countenance. words that sounded deeply suspicious to me. Republic, independence, constitution.
Once at sea, you went below and found yourself...
outside the young fellow's cabin. It was empty.
How did you know?
The door was ajar, sir.
Tell the jury what you did next.
I decided that I would see if my suspicions were correct or not.
You decided, as a patriot, to do something you would never normally do?
Exactly.
And?
There were lists.
Lists?
Of names, places, dates, in France and England. And money, yellow boys, guineas.
French names?
Definitely.
And names which could have been those of rebels in North America?
Easily.
At a time when French agents were known to be at work in the colonies, undermining the proper rule of King and Parliament?
Certainly.
Thank you, Mr. Barsad. That will be all. You may stand down.
Does the defence have any questions of this witness?
Not at this time, my lord.
The court will recess and resume at 2 o'clock. Mr. Lowy? Mr. Lowy?
Jerry!
They said at the office that you...
That I might want to send a message. Indeed, I might, Jerry. They'll want to know the verdict when it comes, and you are a sight faster on your feet than I am.
We as an interest?
Very much so. We act as bankers for Mr. Darnay. Yeah, we act as bankers.
Mr. Lowry! Oh, I'm sorry. You are engaged.
Not at all, Miss Manette. This is Jerry Cruncher from Tellson's.
I remember. You delivered a letter to me. How are you, Mr. Crunch?
Lucy, if you ever need a solid man, then Jerry is that man.
As you say, Mr. Lovey, on the bank's business, I am implacable. But I tell you what, miss, this here ain't no place for a young lady.
I am to be a witness, Mr. Cruncher. God help me. And my poor father, too.
Oh, the old gent. Going on well, is he?
Well enough, Jerry.
But I fear for today. I must go to him. Mr. Cruncher...
Oh, I'll tell you what, Mr. Lowy, if that there girl is a friend of the young fellow in the dock, then it don't look good for her.
You think not, Jerry?
Don't you, Mr. Lowy?
I'm a banker, Jerry, my concern...
way things is going, with the French wars and the bloody Yankee doodles, they wants a culprit, they wants a hanging and the drawing and the burning of the guts. Wasteful. And, you ask me, that boy's it.
Hold hard, Jerry. Hold hard and hope.
Mr. Lorry, do you recall the voyage in question?
I do.
Was the prisoner in the dock present during that voyage?
I was not on deck. I was ill. I was below.
You are under oath, Mr. Lorry. Did you see Charles Darnay on that boat?
Yes.
Did he join the ship at the last moment?
Yes.
Was he carrying a portmanteau? This portmanteau? Identified by a previous witness as containing lists of names and gold.
It was dark. I was in a hurry.
Mr. Lorry?
Yes, he was carrying a similar portmanteau.
There can hardly have been two identical portmanteaux, I believe. Was it this one, Mr. Lorry?
Yes.
Miss Manette, look at the prisoner. Have you seen him before?
I have.
Where?
On board the ship just mentioned.
Did you have any conversation with the prisoner during the crossing?
I did.
Recall it.
The gentleman...
Do you mean the prisoner?
Yes, I do.
Then call him the prisoner.
When he came on board, he was very kind to my father. He offered his cloak. My father was ill at the time.
Had he come on board alone?
I think there were two other gentlemen with him, but they went ashore. I can't be certain. I was caring for my father.
You can't be certain, Miss Manette?
No, sir.
Manette is a French name, I believe.
My father is French, sir.
Just so. What was the prisoner's conversation?
It was kind and helpful, and I was glad of it. I hope I may not do him any ill today in return.
It is quite clear where your sympathies lie, mademoiselle. Did the prisoner tell you his name?
He said that he was engaged in a business that might get people into trouble and did not wish to harm anyone.
By giving his name, like an honest man, and during this conversation Did the prisoner mention America?
I believe.
Please be accurate.
He tried to explain how the quarrel had started and said that he thought George Washington was...
So the jury can hear, mademoiselle.
That he might gain as great a name in history as King George.
As great a name as King George.
I'm sure he did not mean...
Thank you, mademoiselle. It is for the jury to decide what he meant. That is all.
Mr. Stryver, does the defence wish to examine this witness?
I have no questions. I would, my lord, however, like to recall an earlier witness. So, Mr. Barsad.
Sir.
You have identified the prisoner to this court as the man you saw at the port of Calais and on the Dover boat.
I did, sir.
And I dare say, being in the import-export business, you have a good memory for faces.
Second to none.
Now, help me here, if you would. Import-export of what?
Goods.
Goods, you say. And yet, there is no mention of a Barsad or firm so registered in any of the directories that are published by the Board of Trade.
The name, a different name, yes.
Yes, indeed, sir. You appear to have a number of different names. Clive, Howard, Bramley, under which you testified in a case concerning treason 2 years ago.
I don't know. I can't say.
Could it be, Mr. Barsad, that you are, in fact, a spy, an agent provocateur?
My lord, I must object to the direction of questioning my learned friend is following. It can do no good. There are matters of national interest.
I agree, Sir John. The jury will disregard these remarks. Mr. Stryver, please confine yourself to the case at hand. The witness's profession is not in question here.
Of course, my lord. I shall not mention Mr. Barsad's profession again. Mr. Barsad, using the skills of observation and recollection gained over many years in the import-export business, will you do me the favour of looking at the gentleman who stands now beside me? Perhaps if the gentleman might advance into the body of the court, my lord.
This is most irregular.
I would say most regular. Mr. Carton is my second in this case. It is quite proper that he may stand in this court. My lord?
Very well, Mr. Stryver.
Mr. Barsad, look at this gentleman. Look at the prisoner in the dock. Can you be certain which man you saw on the Dover boat?
They look...
pretty much identical. Although I suspect Mr. Carton had a rather heavier night of it last night than did the prisoner. Anything to say, Mr. Barsad? Nothing, Mr. Barsad? Then you may stand down, Mr. Barsad, and return to your labours in the import-export business. No doubt being well known as a result of this case will help you prosper.
Silence! I say silence! Mr. Stryver.
Members of the jury, this case depends upon the accuracy of the identification of Charles Darnay as being in a certain place on a certain day. The rest of the evidence, I will prove to your satisfaction, is hearsay and hot air. The only real question is, and remember, a man's life hangs upon it. Is this the man? Or is this the man?
Hubbub in court. Celebration amongst our friends. A message sent.
Jerry!
Yeah.
Acquitted. Off now, back to the bank. Tell them, acquitted.
As you say, Mr. Lorry. It confounded me. You remembers that message back then? Recalled to life. Same thing, I reckon. Recalled to life.
By God, so it is. And here's a guinea to wet your whistle with your sharp wit. Now, away with you.
And Mr. Jarvis Lorry, struggling to keep mind fixed on ledgers and profit and loss.
Here he comes. Mr. Darnay, sir, I give you joy of your acquittal.
I hardly know what to say. Beyond giving my everlasting thanks to Mr. Stryver.
I have done my best for you, sir.
And I believe my best is as good as any man's.
Better, by God, Mr. Stryver.
Mr. Stryver, a gent of 30 going on 50, as certain of himself as the bailey is of itself.
Well, you've been here, so you should know. You are a man of business, after all.
I am, sir, and as such, I think I may say today's business is well done. Miss Lucy, how is your father holding up?
I think I should take him home, sir. The memory of those days does not help him. But I cannot go without Mr. Darnay. I hope what I said, what I had to say...
Miss Manette, never in the world...
Any harm
never
to you.
Never any harm from you.
I would not cause, not for the world.
Oh, for the world, Miss Manette, for the world.
Then I am so glad that you...
No, I am... to see you there, in that place. Miss Manette?
No, it is... so hot, that is all.
Miss Manette, you are faint. Here, take my arm.
A chair for Miss Manette?
Sir,
No, it's all right, sir. I will assist Miss Manette.
You might say you are already doing so, sir, since after today's little performance, we could be the same man. Miss Manette, here is a chair. My name is Carton. Sidney Carton.
Good Lord, Miss Luce, I am derelict in my duty. Please, allow me to escort you to a cab. Your father is waiting.
Yes, I must go. Mr. Darnay.
May I come and see you so I may thank you at a better time? In a better place.
I wish you would, sir.
We must go now, if nothing else. Business calls.
Goodbye, Miss Manette.
Well, friend Darnay, did you expect to be standing here alone and free on this evening?
I hardly seem to belong to this world at all yet.
You were well on your way to eternity today, that's for certain. Without Stryver, you'd have swung and been barbecued for an avid public at Tyburn.
You do not need to remind me, sir. Ha. I owe Mr. Stryver much.
Oh, he's a wily bird, is Stryver. But then you owe the chance of our being so alike.
Are we alike? Except in looks. And even that, out of a shadowy courtroom.
Have you eaten?
Nothing. I couldn't.
Then let's say you at the least owe me a dinner, and I know of an inn nearby where they have a private room. I take it you do not care to be on public exhibition any longer.
Very well. Let us dine together.
More pond pudding?
I have enough, thank you. Do you have some yourself?
Oh, I have more than enough. For you?
A little. I am beginning to feel part of this world again.
Is that a satisfaction?
Immensely so.
Well, then, perhaps you are right. We are not much alike. I have little regard for this world, beyond its wine. My greatest hope is to forget I belong to it. Well, if you are done...
I am.
Then let me fill your glass so you may give a toast.
To what?
Why, it's on the tip of your tongue. It ought to be. It must be. Yes, I swear it's there.
Very well. Miss Manette.
Miss Manette. You don't think her worth a full glass, sir?
I have drunk enough for today, I think.
Then tell me.
Yes.
Is it worth being tried for your life to have the sympathy and compassion of Miss Manette? Do you think I particularly like you?
I have not asked myself that question.
Then do so now.
Will you dine with me? You drink with me? No. I do not think you do.
You're not a fool, then?
I am, however, tired.
Do you think I'm drunk?
I think you've been drinking.
You know I've been drinking.
If you say so, then yes, I know you've been drinking.
And you know why I've been drinking?
I know. It's none of my concern. If you'll excuse me, I'll leave you. I have to make preparations for a journey.
To France again? You're taking a chance.
I have no choice.
A matter of honour. Will you visit her before you go?
I'll pay on the way out.
Then tell them to send up another bottle of claret.
Mr. Sidney Carton, that once promising lawyer, gets to his feet and wanders across to a spotted mirror and peers long and deeply into its grimy silver depths. He regards the accused quizzically.
Permission to cross-examine?
It is, of course, in this court given.
Now, my friend, you appear to have got yourself into a fine mess here.
Hmm? I will answer any and all charges at the proper time.
Would that be sober, or...
In vino veritas, Mr. Carton. A fine motto for a lawyer.
And a drunk, Mr. Carton. Meanwhile, we, you and I, take account of the fact that this is a tale of two cities, two countries, two cultures, inextricably twisted and knotted together. So, Paris, where Louis XVI holds his monthly reception. But our business is not with that royal gentleman. History will settle with him in its own good time. We shall go to the magnificent portico where another lord in power, though not so much power, and today feeling somewhat slighted, calls.
My carriage.
Directly, Monsieur le Marquis.
For such is the Marquis Saint-Evremond. Even if he is a little piqued today, this world and all that he wishes from it is at his command.
Take me home.
He wishes to go to his chateau outside Paris. It will be done with all possible speed and as little discomfort as is humanly possible. But first, the flying carriage must pass through the narrow streets of the old city, down a particular narrow street, where a fallen barrel of red wine, the good wine of the south, once flooded the cobbles.
What is it? Why have we stopped?
No!
What is that noise?
A child in the way, sir.
The gentleman leans from his window and regards the cobbles with disdain, for once again they run with red. So much red from the body of so small a child.
Your child?
Dead!
Yes, it is sad. Here, take this for the burying. It'll be more than enough. I hope you have other children.
The commotion brings forth a local tradesman.
Be brave, Gaspar. It's better for the poor child to die a quick and painless death rather than live on in this world.
You are a philosopher, my friend. What's your name?
Defarge.
And your trade?
I sell wine.
Huh? A good trade. Here, spend this as you wish, my philosopher. Very well, driver, carry on.
Come on.
A hand closes over the fallen coin. An arm draws back.
Who did that? Who threw that? Damn you, who...
Apart from the dead child, the street is now empty except... Yes, from the wine shop. A woman comes, pale, her eyes blazing as she fixes her gaze on the gentleman. But he sees nothing.
Carry on.
All this is beneath him. He hardly cares to notice. Nor would he notice the extra weight the coach is hauling now, as from one hanging beneath in the carriage chains. The people emerge. Water is flung to clean the cobbles, and the body of the child is borne away. But, oddly, the father, the grieving father, is not amongst the bearers. The countryside brings solace to the soul, and by the time his carriage delivers him to the door of his chateau, the Marquis Saint-Evremond has quite regained his composure.
Welcome home, Monsieur le Marquis. I trust your stay in Paris was satisfactory?
Satisfactory, Gabel. Has my nephew arrived?
No, not yet, sir.
Very well. When he does, bring him to me. I shall dine in 1 hour in my chambers. Gabel?
I beg your pardon, sir. I was...
There's something wrong with the coach chains. They've been interfered with.
Well, see to it.
Of course, as always, Monsieur le Marquis.
The park surrounding the chateau is charming, formally laid out with walks and lakes and of little interest to the man who slips over the wall and creeps with the creeping shadows of evening, closer to the ancient stones, pink in the last of the sun, of the fairy tale chateau. A window springs to brightness as lamps are lit within. The master's room, surely. The man, stained with the dust of many miles, settles down to wait. He is not hungry or thirsty. He has but one purpose, and so he waits. And as he waits, another carriage comes. It makes no difference to him. His course is set.
Monsieur le Marquis, your nephew is here.
Show him in, Gabelle.
Charles.
Sir?
You are hungry, no doubt. Sit, eat. Gabelle, you may pour wine for Monsieur Charles.
You left Paris?
Early. I did not care to stay. You?
I came direct.
From London? You've been a long time coming.
On the contrary, I told you, I came direct.
Not a long time on the journey, a long time intending it.
I was unavoidably detained by various circumstances.
Without doubt. Gabelle, you may leave. We will do for ourselves.
Monsieur le Marquis.
You know why I've come back.
Do I?
I'm still pursuing the object which took me away. I will continue to do so until the end.
Death, Charles. Oh, surely not that far.
Would you care? For all I know, you may have actively worked against me.
Oh, no, not at all.
I know you would stop me if it came to it. I know you would not care how.
My dear boy, you can't pretend that I didn't make all that perfectly clear years ago.
I agree.
Thank you.
I believe it's only your own loss of favour at court that has kept me out of prison in France.
Dare one ask you to explain?
You no longer have the power to issue a lettre de cachet and have me confined for as long as you desired. Your past behaviour has been such that even this government has cast you off.
Cast loose, perhaps, never off. We are what we are. The old order. Though, granted, there have been some ill-advised attempts at reform which have resulted, as you say, in my no longer being able to protect the family honour with that oh-so-convenient little document. Do you like the wine?
And thank God for it.
Yes, good wine.
Enough! Enough, Uncle.
Ah.
You have made our name detested.
That is merely the involuntary homage of the low to the high.
Driving through the village, looking at the people, at their faces, at what you and yours have made of them.
Please.
I see slavery, I see fear, I see hate.
Then you see the world.
Through your eyes, perhaps, not mine.
Through intelligent eyes, Charles. Look at this world. The animals, the insects that teem upon it. Do we see great compassion? Do we see love and care?
We are not animals, Uncle. We are men, and men have a choice.
Do we really, my boy? The strong, the fast, the clever survive and live off the slow, the stupid, the weak. I'm not saying this is a good thing or a bad thing. I'm only saying it is the thing. Huh? But you must be tired after your journey. Shall we continue this tomorrow?
As you wish. One more thing.
Of course. As long as you require. You see, in this dog-eat-bitch world, it's the civilities that make us human, not our hearts. But do, go on.
We have done wrong and profited by it. That is a fact.
There are no moral facts, Charles. Try not to be weak-headed.
Our family. My father.
Is dead.
My mother, too. But it was from her I received this command to make things right. I am bound to a system, part of a family, but I have no control over either system or family.
Of course, when your father died, I inherited. And let me be clear, Charles. I will give you no help in this matter. You cannot have expected that I would end this system that served us well, and I at least will defend it to the end. It is the only sensible thing to do. Better be a rational creature and accept your natural destiny. But then I see you are lost to the world of sentiment.
This property and France are lost to me. I renounce them.
Oh, renounce France by all means, but the Chateau d'Evremont is not yours to dispose of, nor will be for many years yet.
Whenever it came to me, I would renounce it. What is it but a wilderness of misery and ruin?
Oh, Charles, you sound like a schoolboy. What do you intend to do with yourself?
I shall live in England, make my way there as honestly as I can.
Bravo. Is that all?
That is more than enough. To live amongst ordinary people, Uncle, as if you knew anything of that.
My servants deal with ordinary people, Charles. I am only interested in the extraordinary.
But each one of us, in our own way, is extraordinary.
Charles, please spare me any more of this sentimental guff. Are you in love? Of course you are. Well, no doubt you'll get over it. Good night. Gabelle, please show Monsieur Charles to his room.
Of course, Monsieur Le Marquis.
You're wrong about everything, Uncle. Love is the greatest...
I shall retire myself, Gabelle. I will not require you any further.
A hot, still night. The Marquis walks back and forward a few times in front of the window, letting the air wash over him, and at last he pauses and says, oddly, aloud in that silence,
I am cool now, and may go to bed.
For 3 heavy hours, the old stone face of the chateau stares blindly into the darkness. No moon tonight. No sound tonight except...
He used to play with a wooden grenadier I'd carved for him. He marched it up and down. He said it was the bravest of all the brave soldiers in the king's army. He said when he grew up, he wanted to be a brave soldier too. His name was Pierre. My little boy's name was Pierre. Say his name. Say my son's name.
I can assure you that I...
Say his name.
I have nothing...
Found him, sir, this morning.
Red sun streams in through the half-open window.
What happened here? Murder, Monsieur Charles.
Blood, it seems, will have blood.
The knife. There's a message.
A scrap of paper, letters scrawled in the darkness.
Drive him fast to his tomb.
Oh, God help us.
Yes, my friend. God help us all.
Mr. Carton, are we ready for work?
And in the time it takes an eye to dim unto death, we are in London, at the offices of that lawyer of guile, Mr. Stryver.
As ready as not, Stryver.
In my good memory, read these and find me a strategy, if you will.
Stryver may well once have had a Christian name, but now owns only to Mr., as it were, waiting for the day he'll be on the bench as Lord Stryver. He's definitely a man on the rise.
It's an interesting case, Stryver, but I do see a possible way through it.
Good man. Please prepare me a brief for Wednesday.
You just make sure the claret keeps flowing and you'll have it.
You know, Carton, you're actually a better lawyer than I am. Not a better advocate, since you can hardly stay sober for... Well... I'd say you could do so much better for yourself.
And say it in perfect safety, since you know very well, Stryver, that I don't give a damn for all that stuff.
Yeah, I've often wondered, in the years we've known each other,
Is there anything you do give a damn for?
Stryver, why this sudden fit of schoolgirl philosophy? Oh, well, well.
Well, what?
You're in love.
You've smoked it as usual, Sydney.
Who is to be the future Lady Stryver?
The pretty witness.
What?
The picturesque doctor's daughter, Miss Lucy Manette.
Miss Manette? Was she pretty? Oh,
she was the admiration of the whole court.
Really, Stryver, old man, whoever made the bailey a judge of beauty?
Oh, she was gold like the sun.
Gold like a golden-haired doll.
Nevertheless, I intend to have her. She will make an obedient and beautiful wife, and who could ask for more, eh?
But will she have you, Stryver?
Why would she not, old man? Why ever would she not?
Sydney Carton in a hurry? What does this mean? Late for opening time? Whither bound, Sydney? Ah, Tellson's Bank in the Strand.
Excuse me. What's this then? Mr. Darnay come home early from farm? I don't think so. Mr. Darnay being in the way of a gent who is somewhat particular about his linen.
And you being a person who ain't all that particular about his mouth, my friend.
Don't take it wrong, matey. I've seen you in court doing well for our client. By which I mean managing to stay upright long enough to be recognised.
Who's he, Pa? Friend of yours? Ow! Why'd you do that?
Cause nippers is to be seen and not erred.
Ah, but to err is human, to forgive divine.
What?
What?
I forgive you your rudeness. I need to see Mr. Jarvis Lorry on important business. Now.
Well, I don't know as if he wants to see anything.
I'm a lawyer, and I suspect that one day you might need a friend in the court. Now.
As you say, Governor. Natty, take the gem through for Mr. Lorry.
This way, sir.
Now, on is there.
Oi! You there! What's this, then?
It's a funeral, isn't it?
It looks more like a parade to me.
That's a bloody spy, isn't it? Bugger went and topped himself, they say.
They do?
Yeah, exposed, see? You're no good being a spy when everyone knows you're that son of a bitch, Barsad.
John Barsad?
I don't know his Christian name. Only knows he topped himself. But I ain't saying it was his own hand what done it, on account of they owes him that much. Decent burying for his services, bloody Judas.
What, a decent burying, you say?
Aye, that's what they say. Boneyard outside the walls.
Well, well. Thank you, matey.
Mr. Carton, I cannot imagine what business we might have together. The case is done. I am busy, and I do not believe you have come here to invest your money in Tellson's.
You business people are the very devil to get on with. I practically had to bind the fellow outside with legal tape before he'd let me through.
Good man, Jerry Cruncher.
You believe so?
This is not a talking shop, sir. It's a money shop, and time...
is money. Yes, I know the saying. You have a concern for the Manette family?
I know them.
I've seen you with them at the Bailey. Don't prevaricate with me, Mr. Lorry. My time is also valuable. There's a bottle of Pichon 54 with a long cork waiting at the inn. You have an interest in the family?
Yes.
Do you wish to save them some concern, some worry, perhaps?
Yes.
You know where they lodge?
Yes.
Then come with me now.
We are still in business hours, sir.
Or be damned.
Why, Sydney... what do you do here?
I happen to meet my friend Lorry, of Tellson's Bank, you recall?
I do. The memory of that day is pleasant indeed. A prelude, eh, Sydney?
Mr. Carton did take the liberty of mentioning your happy hopes, Mr. Stryver.
As a friend of the family.
Indeed, indeed. Your advice, sir, might prove invaluable, if you care to share it.
I do, sir. Though I fear... I fear in this matter, sir, great honour though it does you, and does Miss Manette...
sir?
...that you will be too much.
I'll be hanged if I know what you mean. Am I not eligible?
Eligible, indeed.
And prosperous, and advancing?
Indeed, indeed.
Then what, I say, what is your meaning?
I think I wouldn't, if I was you.
Would you not, sir?
Because, as I'm certain a gentleman of your perspicacity will see... to venture upon a course without hope of success...
you foresee a problem?
Impossible embarrassment.
You say embarrassment? You mean that
Miss Manette might not appreciate.
Might not indeed.
Is she a fool, then?
Sir, I will not hear a word said against her. But a nod to the wise. As a businessman, if you were contemplating an investment, I would have to say, can't recommend a purchase.
I see.
If word got out on the circuit of a rejection...
Quite. Exactly. Well, it looks like rain. I think I shall stroll down to Golden Square to the coffee house. Yes, sir. That's what I shall do. A pleasure to meet you again, Mr. Lorry. Mm-hmm. Do give my best wishes to your friends. Carlton? Yes.
You could have been a lawyer, Mr. Lorry.
I have no taste for blood, sir. But I see in our walk we have ended up at our destination. And since we are here, perhaps in some small appreciation, I may invite you in. I'm sure Miss Manette will not mind.
Look, she is never to know.
Well, that is understood, but there is no reason why she should not know Mr. Carton as one to whom she has every reason to feel grateful.
No, I cannot. I am...
Getting wet. Be practical, sir. Come into the dry. Besides, Miss Manette will offer us tea. The drink that refreshes but does not inebriate.
How do you drink your tea, Mr. Carton?
As seldom as possible. As it comes from the pump, pot, Miss Manette.
Mr. Lorry, as usual.
If you please, my dear. I met Mr. Carton on my way here. I hope you do not object to...
Of course not. I felt I had not done my proper duty in thanking you, sir, after the trial. Though I believe you took dinner with Mr. Darnay.
I did.
I am so glad the two of you are friends. Mr. Darnay visited us here often before he went abroad. He mentioned how very obliged he was to you, and so am I. You will always be welcome in my house, Mr. Carton.
Welcome in your... Miss Manette, it is... There is something that... Yes, I must say to you. Now, here, that I feel that the rain sounds like footsteps.
Yes, how clever you are. Thousands of footsteps.
A great crowd.
Coming into our lives. Thousands of footsteps.
In A Tale of Two Cities by Charles Dickens, Charles Darnay is played by Andrew Scott, the Marquis Saint Evremond by Clive Merrison, and Lucy Manette by Lydia Wilson. Sidney Carton is Paul Reddy, Jarvis Lorry, Jonathan Coy, Defarge, James Lely, and Barsad, Gerard McDermott. Jerry is played by Carl Prekop, Mrs. Cruncher by Adjua Ando, and Natty by Daniel Cooper. Charles Dickens is Robert Lindsay. Other parts are played by Adam Billington, Simon Bubb, Paul Moriarty, and Christopher Webster. The music is by Leonard Bush. A Tale of Two Cities is dramatized by Mike Walker and directed by Jeremy Mortimer and Jessica Dromgoole.